Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. This is Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this week. Today is Tuesday, November 20th. I'm recording this early. Thursday's Thanksgiving in the United States and Canada, and I'm on the road tomorrow headed to the Texas Panhandle. We're organizing a meet and greet in Philadelphia when I'm there for Christmas. We'll be doing Christmas afternoon light snacks for 2 hours at 1:45 p.m. in the Malvern area outside of Philadelphia. That'll be Friday, December 21st. If you're interested, we hope to have something out where you can sign up by tomorrow afternoon. That's right, Christmas is coming, so give the gift mailing happens after Thanksgiving. We invite you to give a complimentary 60-day subscription to the Slayer Report to the person of your choice. You can see the commentary on the homepage. It describes what we need. The person you give your complimentary gift to will have the benefit of the Slayer Report subscription from the third week in December to the third week in February. So it includes the big 2018 annual wrap-up, including the big theme, the equity overview, news, trends, and stories with Dr. Farrell. It'll be very juicy. A lot happened this year. So it's a really great gift to give to somebody who would find it illuminating and useful. Anyway, to give this gift, just send the first and the last name, their mailing address, the phone number, and their email address to customerservice@slayer.com. We need that by December 17th to get it out in that third week. If you have any questions, feel free to just email customerservice@slayer.com or call our customer service number, 866-311-2543. That's 866-311-2543. And we hope that that helps your Christmas gift budget a little bit. The second quarter wrap-up PDF is up and the hard copies are at the store. The premium subscribers should all have received yours. If you haven't received yours, please let us know. And again, if you're not a premium subscriber, you can always order a hard copy at the store. We reissued our 2016 prayer book as a generic, and we'll have a commentary up on Friday that'll show you how to just access it in a PDF form. If you want a copy, send your name and mailing address to prayers@slayer.com. Feel free to get some extra ones. They make great stocking stuffers at Christmas time. There's a new commentary posted today. Daniel Eschelin asked me if I would record a brief recommendation for housing policies for the new president of Mexico, is being inaugurated shortly. And that's a former mayor of Mexico City, very experienced and knowledgeable, sort of more populist candidate. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that works. Anyway, you can see that if you're interested in housing policies, that's up at the website. Our theme tonight is give thanks. Again, it's Thanksgiving here in North America, so we're in the mood. We all have many people and many things to give thanks for. The Slayer team and most of you listening today live in the developed world, where living conditions are far superior to many parts of the world. And of course, most of us are in places where the world is at peace, not at war. And so it's really a time to count our blessings. To me, living works best when you nurture what is working. I'm a person who's had to go down to peanut butter and jelly several times in my life, and I find that you work through by simply nurturing what works, and that's how you find your pathway. So I see that giving thanks for our blessings is such a powerful force. It's why us Christians always talk about an attitude of gratitude. Cost inflation is squeezing a lot of people throughout the world, both developed and developing, and it's a good time to embrace that which offers you life and let go of the things that no longer do. We have to be continuously re-engineering when cost inflation is like this. The cost inflation and corruption has caused a great deal of loss and heartbreak, and it's compounded by change. Now, it's worked for some, but not for everybody. So for those of us in the U.S. and Canada who do celebrate Thanksgiving, it's a good time to contemplate one of my favorite expressions from preacher T.D. Jakes. You'll see it in our prayer book. God does not need what you have lost to bless you. I'm always quoting that when somebody is whining just a little bit too much, including myself. What we have can always grow and blossom into what we want. So I would suggest, if you feel like it, make a list of all the people and things in your life that makes your popsicle index go up. And I think you'd be quite amazed, and shift more time and attention to them. Whatever you do, give thanks for them. This Thanksgiving, there are two groups I particularly want to focus my personal thanks on. One is the farmers and ranchers who continue to grow organic and biodynamic food, and the grocers and farmer market organizers who continue to make that healthy, fresh food commercially available and feasible. If you haven't watched the Wave Genome, wonderful episode from Future Science by Ulrich Groniker, it really has a marvelous section where it talks about the vitality of food and how important it is. It's quite eye-opening. So it's critical that we support these people, and I think just simply appreciating them and giving thanks is important. I said recently on the Salieri Report, there are now 200 agri-hoods in the U.S. One of the wonderful subscribers in New York focused me once again on agri-hoods. An agri-hood is a housing development that's developed around a fresh food farm, you know, presumably usually organic or organic-like farms. You know, and with 200, it's beginning to look like, you know, a farm in the middle is more important than a golf course as a, you know, as a marketing thing. Anyway, I called Harry Blazer this week. I said, you have to do a food series on agri-hoods. So the first group is farmers and ranchers. The second group is the following. A 2014 study by Pew Research Center found that 52% of U.S. residents in their 60s, or 17.4 million people, are financially supporting either a parent or an adult child, and that's up from 45% in 2005. Significant increase. About 1.2 million are supporting both a parent and a child, more than a decade ago. It's recently reported, in fact, that more than 50% of U.S. children live in a household that receives means-tested government subsidy. What this means is families are stretching to make sure things work. I know when I travel around the country and the world, so many Salieri subscribers are carrying heavy family responsibilities, including heavy family responsibilities that they had never expected would happen. So I want to thank you, because giving begins in our homes and our families, in the intimate spaces of our lives, and your investment in helping your family makes a world of difference and is deeply appreciated. And I'll just end with our quote for the week from Joseph Auslander. Dear Lord, we beg but one boon more, peace in the hearts of all men living, peace in the whole world this Thanksgiving. Money and markets. Again, remember, I'm talking to you on Tuesday, November 20th. We'll post this on Wednesday, but I'm working with the Tuesday close. U.S. dollar index, a tad stronger. It's now up 5.33% for the year. Bonds still hurting. Again, this has been the problem. If you know, usually when stocks are down, you go to fixed income, but fixed income has not necessarily been the investor's friend this year. The long treasury ETF down 7.26%, the intermediate down 2.26%, and the bond aggregate down 2.1%. And finally, junk showing probably some of the credit concerns from the oil sector, now almost 2%, down 1.89%. Equities, not good. S&P now up 0.27% for the year. So basically, S&P is flat, which makes it look better than just about any other equities around. Pharmaceuticals doing well, and we'll talk about that. The FANG, which is Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, the techs that have led the S&P up since the bailouts, FANG is in bear territory. And frankly, in my opinion, FANG, with the exception of Netflix, has a negative total economic return to the world. And I think the world would be immensely better off if some of them failed or they had a positive response internally to the threat of failure. It doesn't look like they are having a positive response. Zuckerberg announced that the firm was at war. A very juicy article this week in the Wall Street Journal about Zuckerberg's hunkering down and anger at his number two for what's going on. But I think certainly the world would be better if capital flows to more productive purposes than U.S. social media. So I, for one, don't see FANG being in the territory is a bad thing. I said before the election I thought we would find our bottom and this would turn out to be a correction, and gave it 75% chance we'd end up with this proving to be a correction, 25% we'd go into a bear. Given where we are, the chances of a bear are probably higher, say at most 50-50. I still, you know, my intuition still tells me we'll find our bottom. The reality, though, is if you look at what the squabble in the South China Sea and the fight where we came out in the last Asian round of meetings with the Chinese, it looked pretty ugly. And I think the indications that the Chinese trade war will get much worse and the rebalancing between the U.S. and China will continue to be ugly and uglier. And that U.S. leadership is going to be very negative post the election in terms of domestic politics. Both of those argue for a significant rise in non-alignments. Now, the market's been ignoring non-alignments for a long time, but I think it's beginning, the meanness is beginning to really pinch. I don't underestimate, which I think a lot of sort of financial commentators in the independent media do, I don't underestimate the power of the U.S. leadership to generate more earnings from North America. I think the cash flows, which I believe are probably going on between the federal government and the banks related to the California fires, you know, could make this, the burning of California, a highly profitable affair. And if you add the construction and home building that I think are coming from swinging back operations and the high IQ immigrants, the boom for someone is going to be quite juicy. And we'll talk more when I do the deep state with Harry Blaser in 2 weeks about Amazon, Apple, and the teeing up of a variety of different government reengineering. So corporations are going to pick up a lot more profits, I believe, on reengineering government. There's no doubt the Midianite thing could mess it up. You bet. And if you don't know what I mean by the Midianite thing, go just check out the story of Gideon in Judges chapters 6 through 9 in the Old Testament, or head to Wikipedia and read the entry on Gideon and Gideon's army. The home builders are down. They're also bear territory, 22.76%. Europe correcting. VGK down 12.3%. Germany, and that's VGK is the European ETF. Germany ETF down 18%. The developed markets minus North America EFA down 11%. The Chinese large caps down 11.87%, small caps down 16%, emerging markets down 15.66%. Again, let's see if we find our bottom. My bet is we're still in correction mode. Commodities down 5.2% and GLD down, the gold ETF down 6.45%. Silver down 15.88%. Oil clearly headed into a bear, down 8.87%, but way much further down off the high, you know, because oil had quite a run. I'm using ETFs just to track the markets, but I have off and on through the last 10 years talked about how I am uncomfortable I am with the loose provisions on ETFs and the liquidity issues if we get a down market. So please don't think my using them to track market means that I think ETFs are a great idea and are necessarily safe in this kind of environment. If you haven't read my piece that I wrote with Carolyn Betts on GLD and SLV, it's called, in the title, if you want to do a search, is Precious Metals Puzzle Palace. Anyway, we talk about the, you know, the looseness of an ETF structure with respect to the gold and silver ETF, GLD and SLV, and that'll give you some idea of some of my concerns. I talked a lot about the California fires last week. I've continued to read the news and receive lots of reports. The whole coverage of the fires has been overwhelmed now with different eyewitness reports, but also a tremendous amount of disinformation, which makes it much more time-consuming and hard to figure out more. I am really concerned. I have a lot of questions about how smart meters and digital chips and digital systems in houses and cars contributed to the wildness of the speed of the fires, or the delivery of what could be many different kinds of technology. One report I posted was there's more and more concern now that very wealthy are able to arrange very quickly proprietary firefighters. Part of the issue on being effective in these circumstances is to get to the fires quickly. And one of the clear problems has been it's been the governments are not in a position to swing a lot of people fast in many cases. So they've been outgunned by what's been happening. But we have reports of some of the wealthy people in Malibu, celebrities, having proprietary firefighters who saved their properties. Apparently it's happening because the insurance companies would rather pay the firefighters than have to pay the claim. So the economics for the insurance companies make it attractive. At the same time, it's nuts that this should be going on, that we shouldn't have a civic response in America that applies to all. This is quite futile in nature. I very much appreciate everybody sending me all the reports they see, particularly eyewitness reports from people you consider to be trustworthy. The more I can get intel from the ground, the better off I am. So thank you for keep sending the information on California fires and fires anywhere. Keep posting it. Just a wealth of rich comments and input and knowledge, and let's just keep the people who are missing in our prayers. Megacities. I was going to record Megacities on Thursday after recording my piece on the California burning, or I think the title was Burning California, more appropriate. And I delayed simply because what I realized as I started to record Megacities, I was in such a negative state from covering what was happening in California that I just couldn't be balanced. And there are issues about megacities, which for me, I find very negative and ominous. One of the reasons I used to love cities, you know, I was totally a city person, is they had such open-minded cultures. It was a place where open-minded people were attracted to, where open-minded people went, where you were open-minded. And my experience with some of the megacities is because of all the mind control technology, the mind is closing, and it can make them, you know, when you add people who are making money on organized crime or rich government subsidy that essentially I believe is organized crime, it makes it really unattractive. You're sort of there with the corrupt, the perverted, and the mind controlled, and it makes it a much less attractive space spiritually and intellectually. At the same time, real estate as a percent of global markets is growing and in amount, both amounts and importance. So I think it's a very important topic to cover. And some cities, I hope many cities, are going to get it right. And if they do, it's going to be a much more wonderful world. Globalization equals urbanization. So I really encourage you to listen to that audio. We'll have the written report up, I hope, by early next week. U.S. midterm election aftermath. Peggy Noonan wrote a great editorial, which I put up on the website, America Could Use Some Deals. And basically what she said is, you know, what we need is for everybody to come back to Congress. And remember, we pay them to do the business of the country. Please cut a deal, a bipartisan deal on immigration and healthcare. We'll all be the better for it. I thought it was a super editorial. Some of the subscribers pointed out, you know, it's with California burning, it's gone way too far for these kinds of little incremental changes. And they're right. They're absolutely right. But in trench warfare, it's essential to make gains wherever you can. Positive actions are force multipliers. And, you know, something, we pay a huge amount of money for Congress. And if you look at the amount of time and money that is being wasted on highly negative move and counter moves, you know, it goes back to what Chuck Schumer, God bless him, said about you have to do whatever the intelligence agencies say. The question is, who runs Washington? Is it our elected representatives or the CIA? You know, for the last 2 years, it looks like the CIA is supreme. We need a breakout plan. So I argue for incremental, whatever positive we can get. However, I will tell you, after watching the news over the last week, what I'm seeing is a double down on fake news and fake stories. I am getting nasty in my tweets, but the latest video from Obama is he's blaming the country's problems on racism, people with mommy issues. Now, You can't fathom this. Here's a man who gave $24 trillion of our money to the banks, and then $7 trillion disappeared from the U.S. government accounts when he was president. Meantime, he and his wife have a $65 million book contract, while now more than half of the people in America, half of the children in America, live on means-tested government subsidy, food stamps, housing subsidy, welfare, and I just gave you the statistics earlier on people in their 60s taking care of parents and kids. So while Obama was shoving major, major money into the banks and the black budget, the living conditions and the net worth of the average American was deteriorating mightily. Now, and this guy, you know, the $65 million book contract, in my opinion, is not a book contract. We call that a kickback where I come from. And so this guy's blaming America's problems on racism. It's just, you know, you cannot believe the hubris. And I guess that's what you pay people for. You pay them $65 million to get up and with a straight face say things like this. It's amazing. Anyway, I really get worked up, but I'm worked up. Anyway, in the meantime, one of the stories I put up on the blog, the GI Bill recipients, we have over 82,000 vets who were promised, you know, and this is contractual, housing payments, other help with school, and they're literally being stiffed. Now, the VA is blaming it on IT glitches. I don't buy it. 21 trillion of undocumentable adjustments at DOD blamed on IT system says to me that since 1998, for 20 years straight, DOD can pay out trillions of dollars, you know, into oblivion when IT systems don't work. So if they can do it there, they can certainly pay people that they have contractual obligations with who've made arrangements for school and housing based on, you know, technically or possibly you could talk about a significant number of additional vets going homeless at Christmas time. It's unbelievable. Anyway, the VA has now announced that they are working with Apple to make medical records portable on the iPhone. I believe that anything that continues to move private medical records into corporate hands is extremely dangerous. Now, you can argue that the NSA and corporate contractors for the VA have already controlled, sold, given away that data, you know, and I would say you're probably right. But turning over control of this kind of data to private data and making it available through mobile phones, you know, I understand that there are tremendous efficiencies that are possible. But, you know, if you look at the integrity problems with the internet, with the cloud, with the healthcare system, you know, those systems have not proven themselves to be ethical and competent. And at this level of corruption, this is a frightening idea. And of course, it just tees up massive privatization when the last head of HHS and the, was it, I guess the VA who retired, it was one of them, warned that massive privatization was coming, which is what I've warned. But making the records portable suddenly puts you in a position to privatize all the VA hospitals, and it's not going to be pretty. The word that keeps coming to mind all week long is brazen, brazen, brazen. And I think that's a word to be thinking about as we go forward, because the criminality is getting very brazen. California is brazen. What's happening at the VA with the abrogation of contracts is brazen. But let me bring up another story. HHS official, former Pfizer executive Daniel Best, was reported dead on November 1st. He was found in his apartment garage in D.C. with multiple force injuries. Let me say that again. Multiple force injuries. I'm assuming the guy got bludgeoned or beaten to death. On November 14th, 2 weeks later, the D.C. Examiner proclaimed it was a suicide, which means they're saying the guy killed himself with multiple force injuries. How many people do you know who commit suicide with multiple force injuries. Remember, if you have a big life insurance policy and you commit suicide, then the insurance company doesn't have to pay. And, you know, insurance companies who have to pay big money out for other people to assassinate their enemies, those insurance agencies can get mad. So suicide is a very convenient way, among other things, to not pay out the insurance. Best left a wife and, I believe, 3 kids, according to the news reports. The next day after November 14th, on November 15th, Pfizer announces that it's going to not keep its prices down as promised the Trump administration. They're going to all raise in January. Now, I'll bet you that decision got made this summer. You can guess where. And that's when their stock started to rise. Pfizer is significantly outperforming the S&P this year. What a surprise. Now, I don't know what the real story is, but it's all very coinkadinky, as one of my old colleagues used to say. But the brazenness of it is outrageous. You just, you know, as you watch the dots unfold, you think it cannot really be this bad. It's like we're all MENA, Arkansas now. Okay, so let's turn to Brexit. Theresa May has negotiated, from what I can see through the commentaries in the papers, a deal which is probably worse than remaining in the EU. And it looks like everybody else in Britain just about agrees with that. And so this deal may very well not go through. Clearly, in my opinion, UK would be much better off with a hard Brexit than this deal. So I think May is in serious trouble, and I think the deal is in serious trouble. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Meantime, we had Macron floating a trial balloon for the idea of an EU military. If you're going to make the euro a very powerful currency, including one that could replace the US dollar as reserve currency, you could certainly increase the presence of the euro in terms of global liquidity. If you had a military shared by the northern European countries, it could be very powerful. The problem is that Europe would probably have to double or triple the amount that they spend on defense. One of the reasons they have such a wonderful infrastructure is that their military expenditure is significantly less on a per capita basis than ours. And so I think the idea, somebody wrote an editorial this week that I read saying, you know, never going to happen. And if you look at the extraordinary fiscal commitment it would take, I tend to agree, it would, of the different ways this could go, that's unlikely. But I still think the chances of the EU reconfiguring as a Northern Europe alliance is still very real. GDP growth is clearly slowing globally. The housing market is slowing. We're getting reports from a couple of areas. And I think part of this is you have such negativity. Part of it is because technocracy is growing. We're trying to run the world through rules and politics instead of markets. And technocracy is growing, and that's oppressive. But organized crime is still completely and utterly out of control. And the war on terrorism has just wildly exacerbated that. A few more stories I want to point out. The CIA has found the Saudi crown prince responsible for the journalists for Khashoggi's murder. And it looks to me like more regime change. We have some of the older princes sitting and waiting, so it wouldn't surprise me. Trump has reaffirmed our relationship with Saudi Arabia, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's regime change up. And I'm just wondering if that regime change isn't a lot more supportive of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. You almost wonder if there wasn't a Saddam Hussein Kuwait trick here. Go look up this April Glaspie, who was the ambassador at the time to Iraq, and pulled a neat trick arranged by the Americans to get Hussein to believe that if he attacked Kuwait, it wasn't America's business and we would stay out. You know, another cute regime change trick. Anyway, I'm wondering if that's how the crown prince basically got himself in very hot water. What's up in Haiti? Something I tweeted out and posted a new interview with Dr. Daddy Sherry. The GOP has just announced a review of the Department of Justice Huber's attorney general, or I guess assistant attorney general, Huber, his investigation in the Clinton Foundation. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's a connection between whatever is going on in Haiti sort of the stewing of the pot of the Clinton Foundation and the financial interests that have been trying to make money sort of raping Haiti. Anyway, there's something up, and it'll be very curious to see how what we can figure out from the intelligence that emerges. I'd love to know more about this one. The Nissan chairman has been arrested in Japan, and it shows you, the story shows the intense politics of business these days. It's frightening when you consider the quality of Nissan cars and the importance of that operation in many areas of the world, that the chairman is a political football and the corruption allegations are what they are. The chairman was planning a Nissan-Renault merger that the Japanese carmakers board had opposed. And you wonder what is going on. But it reminds me of what one deputy assistant secretary once said in the Bush administration when he was working with me for Kemp and the group around Kemp. He said, this is crazy. It's like people fighting with razor blades on a rubber lifeboat. And that's what the establishment looks like worldwide. It's the Minionite thing. And I'll tell you, folks, it's got a lot more it can grow before we get real change. Our hero this week is Bill Nyman, who is one of the great leaders of the American food industry. He's a farmer and rancher. He's founded several businesses and ranch, and he just sold Bean Ranch to another company, and is now has got a new ranch with his wife, Nicolette, in Bolinas, California. And this is his third interview on the food series that he's doing this week on poultry. He and Harry have done beef, they've done hogs, they've done pork, and now this week is poultry, and Harry's still got lamb and sheep to do. So, and this is really a gem because Bill is one of the great, there's no one who knows more about livestock in America and producing great meat from livestock than Bill. So this is a real treat to be able to have this collection on the Salieri Report. And I want to thank Bill for doing it because if you're a rancher these days, particularly in California, you are busy. And let's go to the movies. I recommend a movie called The Blind Side. I bet a lot of you have watched it. It's based on a true story from Memphis, Tennessee. It's the life of the Tuohy family and their adopted son, Michael, who becomes a world-class football player. And one of the reasons I chose it, it has one of my favorite Thanksgiving dinner movie scenes. But it's very much a Thanksgiving tradition movie because it's about love of God, family, home, education, and all the things that make life here in the Tennessee area, in the Memphis area, pretty wonderful. Our interview, as I said, is Harry Blaser talking with Bill Nyman about poultry. It was so funny because Harry recorded this a while ago, and it just fell out. The perfect time to run it was in November, which, of course, turned out to be Thanksgiving. And for those of you who don't live in North America, you might not appreciate that everyone, almost everybody, has either turkey or chicken on Thanksgiving. So, some of us have ham, but poultry pretty much in America is the food of choice at Thanksgiving. For longtime Salieri subscribers, I'll give you a little piece of trivia information. Adam Trombley, who recorded both the interview, our interview on Breakthrough Energy and our interview on entrainment technology, his dad invented the butterball turkey. So there you have it. Poultry on the Salieri Report. Ask Catherine. Dear Catherine, it's over a year now since Jason Bodensmith interviewed Cal and Josh from the InPower Movement program. For your next interview with Jason, will you discuss the InPower Movement? And then he goes on, I'll put the whole comment in the notes to the Money and Markets. He goes on and says, please to listen to Anna von Rietz's interview. So, and suggests a couple more books. So I think I've been very impressed at what InPower is doing, but I haven't looked too closely at it. Again, it's certainly on my list to look at Anna von Rietz and what she's doing. So I thank you for those comments. It's certainly on my list. And just remember, I can always do more, but so can everybody else. So we need many, many people doing these things. So But I will certainly, when Jason comes back on, I'm hoping to have him on. I talked to him about when I could get him back on, and he's waiting until he's ready to launch the project he's working on, which could be about 6 months, but I'll certainly have him on in 2019. Hi, Catherine. I just listened to the latest Money in Markets and heard that you would be in Pennsylvania around Christmas. I'd be grateful to have a chance to meet up with you and our other Solari members if this is possible. Yes, it is possible. We're going to organize something for the afternoon of Friday the 21st in the Malvern area outside of Philadelphia. It's very easy to get out there on the train out to Malvern, PA. It's on the main line outside of Philadelphia. So there's going to be you. There's going to be me. In fact, there are two others that we've invited. So we're up to four, and we'll mail it out this week. And let's see if anybody else comes. But I would be happy to do that. And thank you for the suggestion. Okay, that's it for this week. November 29th, next week, Bill Binney and Kirk Wiebe join me. They're from Amsterdam on their exciting new venture, Pretty Good Knowledge. Wonderful new company, and talking a lot about how to build information architecture that works for us. December 6th, Harry Blaser and I are going to be talking about the deep state and the reengineering of America. I think now that the election is over, we're seeing more moves that tell us more about what's happening. I think it's important that we're all prepared. Then Bridget Mouche comes back the following week with her next episode in the wellness series. It looks very good. Then I have a whole series of interviews from Europe that I did in my last month in Europe. Thomas Meyer, Dr. Catherine Horton, and two more that are quite interesting. We'll be putting up a lot of those as special reports. In 2 weeks in December, coming into Christmas, we'll be doing the best of 2018. The first one will be the wrap-ups. So we'll do all the 2018 wrap-ups. What we do with this is we want to make sure that you don't miss the very best of 2018, because so much of our content grows on itself, and we just want to make sure you get the best of the best. The following week after the wrap-ups, we'll have the favorites chosen by the Solari team, but we really want to get your input. So if you're clear that something's your favorite, it's going to make it into the favorite. So if you have a candidate and feel like you want to express your opinion, just post it at subscriber input or email it to askcatherine@solari.com. We'd love to know what your favorites were for 2018. For subscribers in the U.S. and Canada, again, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. For subscribers in Europe, Asia, Mexico, and Latin America, forgive us while we eat too much turkey and stuffing and maybe chicken and ham and a lot of other great Thanksgiving foods. And forgive us that we ignore our email until next week. So until next week with Bill Binney and Kirk Wiebe, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.